This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Is Sky Blues Extra.
Hello everybody and welcome along to another Sky Blues Extra podcast with myself, Dean Atkinson, Ross Cooper with me also this evening. Ross, how are you going?
Yeah, not too bad, mate. Not too bad. Good to be on with you as always. So yeah, a strange weekend. It's always slightly deflating after we've got used to it the last two Fridays, play on a Friday, lose, and then the rest of the weekend is somewhat ruined, but it's been brightened up in the latter stages of a Sunday by seeing your wonderful face, mate. So
I thought you were going to say, right, seeing a Man City victory or something like that. It should brighten up your day.
No, I mean, as soon as they went 1-0 down, I was like, definitely put a few quid on them to turn it around. Sort of won a little bit better. So
I saw at one stage over the weekend, Man United was 6-1 to win there.
They were 8-1 beforehand, I saw.
But yeah, wow.
I was thinking that was extremely generous.
You'll probably get 8-1 on Rotherham on Tuesday night or Wednesday night, whenever it is this week. Friday night games, mate. I'm not into them. Like I like a routine on a weekend, right?
Yeah.
We're not having many Saturday games anyway, really, especially at home. Well, at 3 o'clock.
The thing is, I find is when you've got a Saturday game, yeah, like you say, good point. Yeah, you know, especially home games, 3 o'clock have been scarce. But if we're playing away, I feel like the day can start, you know, Friday's Friday. So I'm like, wicked, you know. And then Saturday, it's like, oh, it's the weekend. You know, it's Saturday. So it's always, regardless, it starts off on a decent note. And then it's like, and then the football comes, but I could have a drink, a gin or a beer or whatever. And then it's sort of just, you know, you can deal with it. Whereas I feel like playing on a Friday, suddenly I woke up on Saturday morning and I was like, oh, it just started.
I need to find something to do for a start.
Yeah, you just feel like a loss. And then I feel like I have zero interest in the rest of the games. So it was, disappointing. And the last two weekends have obviously been like that. So, yeah, hopefully that's the back of the Friday night games.
I think it'll be like 5 months since we had a home game on a Saturday in between the two games. It's November.
It's Stoke, isn't it? It was the Stoke 0-0.
And I think the next one's in April, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so Stoke 0-0 was the 11th of November. And then the next one would be Leeds 6th of April. Yeah,
that can't be right. Like that, obviously it's right in the context of things, but you can't have that.
It's going to be as bad, if not worse, you know.
I know, because of how many options they've got.
But
to put
the
games
positive
in,
yeah. but the positive is Harley was saying to me that obviously they're supposed to announce the TV games all the way up to Christmas at the start of the season.
Right.
So, like, at least that way you can plan. So, like, he'll be able to work out what games he can do, et cetera. And then other fans can go, okay, we know that game's been moved, et cetera, et cetera. That's a Sunday, that's 12 p.m. So, if they do that, then that is something, because then at least people can go, okay, it's when it gets moved, you know, the 3-4 weeks before. And it's like, you know, and you know, people have, you know, bought train tickets, you know, for you know, thinking it's one day, and then it, if I, then you turn out it's the other day.
I was smiling like the Cheshire Cat when I saw that certain somebody booked a train ticket, and the match is actually inevitably ended up on the Saturday. Yeah. Let's talk about that, because we didn't talk about, because we recorded it before the draw took place. Away at Wolverhampton Wanderers. Thoughts?
I think before the draw, I sort of looked at it and thought, honestly, the worst results would have been like Bournemouth away, but obviously then they lost to Leicester. I really didn't want Leicester again. And then I thought Brighton away, out of the two, Brighton and Wolves would have been the worst, because whereas at least Wolves has got some sort of Midlands sort of spice. But I sort of, so initially I was quite underwhelmed, because again, it feels like it's been donkey's years since we played like a massive team, you know, home or away. And I think, you know, it'd have been great, you know, for the away fans or at the CBS to have a Liverpool or a United or something. But then I thought about it and thought, if we, you know, and then we backed it up with that abysmal performance on Friday. But I did think that if we perform well, it's a winnable game, you know, of all the Premier League sides.
That's what I feel,
you know, after that initial thing of like, oh, you know, we're not got one of the big boys, you then think, well, actually, if you said to me, you've got to beat Wolves, you know, West Midlands derby sort of feel to get to a semi-final. Well, actually, there's a lot harder games you could have. Look at Newcastle. They've got to go Man City away. So I look at it and think, it's not a bad draw. And I think if we can go into it with a bit of form, we've got a chance.
Yeah, I think we got the perfect fixture. Of what was available, I think we got the best one. Obviously, I would have rather been at home. But if we got that draw away, then I was totally fine with that.
Because, it's got the makings of great away scenes. Do you know what I mean? Away limbs, if we were to do it. You know, it's...
It looks like we'll get a decent allocation as well. Not a huge amount, but a decent amount. Yeah. 3,000 to 4,000 or something along those lines, which is exciting. I'm really excited. And I feel like, I mean, we'll talk about the season as a whole, but I do feel a bit deflated in relation to the Championship, whereas all our coins kind of now are being put on the FA Cup in a way. That's how it feels like to me.
Yeah, no, it does. It does. And I think back-to-back league defeats is going to do that. And, you know, the FA Cup, I mean, in a way, I think it's potentially a good welcome sort of distraction, really. It gives us something, you know, you got nothing to lose. So maybe in the last couple of games, a bit of pressure has sort of built on the players. And, you know, because we found ourselves in the playoffs, you know, literally sixth, you know, for a couple of weeks. And maybe the pressure's got to them slightly, you know, and with a depleted squad. But the FA Cup's an opportunity, you know, just to go out for it. We've got nothing to lose. And, you know, the key word is, let's just be proactive. Don't be passive. The key word today, passive. I don't want any passive nonsense from the team.
And Wolves are still, you know, in with a shout of European football. They're chasing that in the Premier League. They're playing really well at the moment. They're only, you know, 6 points off Man United in sixth place. So their attention might be elsewhere also. And they've got a few injuries cropping up, I noticed today.
They've got a few injuries. You know, they're not... Look, at the end of the day, they're playing well. I think Gary O'Neill's doing a really good job there. A really, really good job. I like listening to how he speaks after games.
I'm a big fan. But you see him on the Monday Night Football.
Yeah, really good. And, you know, and I do sort of, I warm to him. Just, you know, the way he comes across compared to some other managers, you know, Scott Parker and other people who seem really whiny. Gary O'Neill just seems very level-headed. But they are Wolves. They're not, they are where they are in the league. They're not Man City. They're not Liverpool. You know, they're not Newcastle.
They're not the big six, seven, are they?
No, they're not. You know, because if we were playing one of those big boys, even Man United, who, you know, deep down we sort of go, you know, we'd fancy our chances. The chances are, if we played one of them, it would be curtains, like, you know, no matter what, it would be. As much as I watched Man U today and thought, yeah, we could get at these. I've got to remind myself that, you know, that it's
they are Manchester
De Bruyne,
United.
It's not, you know, and, you know, some of our fans, if you look at, read the forum and see some of the ratings that our players get, then actually I'm not sure we'd stand much of a chance. Whereas at least Wolves, you go, you know what? Let's give it a go.
We've got a shot.
We've got a puncher's chance, haven't we? So,
and if you get into the semi-final at Wembley, one-off game,
who knows, prize money,
right?
I mean, we get over 200 grand just for being on TV, and the winner gets an extra 500 or something like that. It's 500 grand. So
we're talking within the millions then, aren't we, of how much we've secured
from the FA Cup. 100%. So,
which is really important.
It's exciting. So, yeah, hopefully, I'm sure the Scottish Army will sell out in no time, I'm sure.
Right, let's get into the crux of this evening. We'll look back at the West Brom defeat from Friday night. We'll also talk to Jamie McAllister from the Coventry City Disabled Association. He's come on to have a chat about accessibility, etc. for disabled fans. So really interesting conversation that I had with Jamie earlier on today, which we'll include in this week's podcast. And of course, we'll look ahead to Rotherham on Tuesday night. Is it Tuesday or Wednesday?
It is Tuesday, yes. Tuesday night.
They swap and change each week. I can't keep track. But let's get into West Brom. Dismal is the word I used. I was angry on Friday night. I was so angry, Ross. I did something I haven't done in about 4 years, 5 years.
And what was that?
Went on to BBC CWR after the match.
Wow.
And just vented. Really, I was so angry. I just needed to get it out. And, you know, I nearly went into a full-blown argument with Rocky.
Oh, you actually went on. Sorry, yeah. I thought you tuned in. Oh, I'm going to have to go back and listen to it now on BBC Sounds. I'm going to listen. This is exciting.
So I went toe-to-toe with Rocky, you know, talking about, obviously, the defensive structure, which is probably what's going to be talked about the most over the next couple of weeks. And I don't think he was having any of it, to be honest. He kept going on about, you know, Mark Robbins saying the squad is tired and all this sort of stuff. And I was like, well, Oggy, you can't have it both ways. We use one substitution in the whole match. If players are tired, swap it round.
I'm going to give this a listen. I mean, the fact of the matter is I agree with you. I was angry. But I was angry from 7 p.m.
When the team came out.
And I could have told Mark Robbins. He said after the game that, you know, we were far too passive. And everything that happened in the first half is exactly what I imagined when I saw that team. And first of all, the back five. And I was like, "What? I don't get it. I really don't get it.
The only reason why he's done it is because he hasn't got Sakamoto, right? But, so he can't play with the three.
He can't.
In that wing formation.
I would rather he could play. He could do a four... you know, a 4-4-2 diamond, a narrow, or like he could do anything.
I was saying you could do so much stuff, 4-2-2-2, and just just say to everybody, right, just run.
You could have Latibodia and Eccles, you could have Torp, who could then drift down, you got Palmer,
just
you could then have
positions.
O'Hare behind Wright or Sims or whatever it might be. I mean, you could play Palmer on the right, Wright on the left, or Wright on the right, Palmer on the left, Sims up top, and then the normal formation, because he did that against Preston after Sakamoto got taken off. The wing-backs, honestly, and I had to get the stats up. So obviously, we all know that the Stoke game, you know, when we're at the beginning of this great run, where we've lost four games since the 11th of November, when we went to the back four, and we've won countless games, and it took us from wherever, like 20th, 19th, wherever we were, up into this sort of challenge for the playoffs. Before that, we'd won three games all season, and like so many draws. But it was so passive. I remember going Hull away, back five. And all it is side to side to side to side. And it's so predictable. No one's brave enough. It's like we suddenly go within ourselves and that no one wants to break the lines. It's like, what's the point of having these four attacking players in front of it, the box, when you literally don't want to touch the box? You don't want to unbox it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's
you don't want to move from your position. And last year, right, the wing-backs were so integral. And what did they do? They kept moving beyond the line.
Honestly, Dean, what infuriates me is there is not one player in that team on Friday who looked better in the back five, in my opinion. No one. We had one player who was better suited to the back five, and he is no longer playing for us. He's playing for Blackburn Rovers and Fads. He was the only player who you went a back five suits more than a back four.
The whole reason we went to a back five was to get Fads in the team.
Yeah, exactly. He was
in the first place.
Like Van Avac, De Silva, whoever's the wingbacks. And this is what, when I interviewed Bidwell the other week, I was trying to like tease this out. And the question was, our fullbacks, when they're playing in the back four, are 10 times more attacking, are up there. And then as soon as we go to wingbacks, they're just halfway inside our half. And then they just, De Silva knocks it back to Binks. And then the same on the right side. And I go, hang on, what is going on?
It should be the opposite way around.
It should be. And I do not get it. And Robbins, I mean, he said, you know, the first half was the quote, he said it was too passive. It was too, if you go through the results with that back five, Swansea away, the same. It's very slow. It's all very laboured. Hull away was exactly the same. you know, Sunderland at home as well. And, you know, Huddersfield again. And you go through them all. And then, and it's just like, and then obviously we had those four defeats in October going into November. And again, the same sort of thing where it's just so, it is just so predictable. And you watch it and you go, well, if I can see it, then you'd imagine these, you know, a team who's fifth in the championship is going to also be able to read what we're going to do. And all our chances come from pot, like, you know, pot shots from 20 yards. And the other
off thing, target.
The other person who suffers from that this back five is the striker. Absolute yeah. graveyard shift. Sims, I feel sorry for, because I thought, again, he's actually shown a bit of aggression and he's been doing that for a few weeks now, which is what I want to see. But there is no one within 30 yards of him. And it's like, well,
so he feels like
he has
to take, when he gets an opportunity, he feels like he has to take the shot on all the time. And then when one shot doesn't go well, it's on his mind straight away.
Exactly, because everyone, and it's like, there's, you know, O'Hare and Palmer, their job, if we're going to do that, but have to be, that they need to be like right with him. So then it becomes a three. I mean, I was like, I don't know, it's just so, it reminded me, there's been so many games this year. And actually, I'd even say this, and I said this to other, you know, other people last season. And I've said this before, there was a period last year where our general play with the back five was poor, really. But we had two players. We had a striker, and I keep saying that it was a joke, who literally, those balls that we see go up the line, which Sims sort of chases down and doesn't get, Vic was getting those and being able to dribble in the box, win a penalty, or score a goal out of nothing. Football's not changed. We were equally, you know, you had Norton Cuffey on the right, Bidwell on the left. And again, they weren't getting like really high up and stuff. It was exactly the same. And then we had a centre midfielder who would literally just drag, you know, would pick the ball up in a quarterback role and then drive forward 25 yards. And he'd cover that space. Take those two players out, which is what happened over the summer. And then you had that start to the season where I thought pretty much every performance, barring Leicester, because we still had Hamer, after that was just so predictable. And then we go to a back four and we keep a lot more clean sheets. Players look better. Van Avac's getting forward and looking like a joke. People were like, yeah, this guy looks unreal. Bidwell, suddenly a man reborn. I don't get it.
Can I pick you up on the point about the striker, the lone striker, and then obviously running into channels, right? We were spoiled by Victor last year, because name me one other player in this league that goes on the sort of runs that Victor does and holds the ball up like Victor did, and can make something out of nothing like Victor did. We were spoiled. So we automatically, in fans' minds, we feel like any player who plays in that position now has got to play like Victor or has got to be as good as Victor.
And it's not going to happen.
It doesn't happen. There's one player in this whole division who can do that kind of thing, and it's Josh Sargent, and he's coming back from a bad injury.
Yeah.
But even he can't get to the levels that Victor Gyökeres can get. So fans, you need to get it out of your mind of this lone striker being like guns blazing,
I'd like to
getting
think,
the ball past people and taking people on. That doesn't happen.
I'd like to think people are seeing actually the flaws to the system. And this is not just like, this is not me just sort of saying this like, oh, hindsight, whatever. I remember last year before we went on that run after we lost to Stoke and we were drawing at home and stuff, when Vic wasn't on it, we looked, it was like that was it. There was no other plan. And I just feel like he and Hamer last year papered over the cracks to this system. And then we saw at the start of this season, all through August, all through September, into October, we saw that actually, this is very quite laboured. It's very slow. It's very predictable. Suddenly you go to a back four, that freed up everybody. And then we were so much more dynamic. We were actually defensively better. Like this formation, we're worse going forward, we're worse defensively, we're worse in midfield. Everyone just goes introverted. So obviously when I saw that on the team sheet, I was like, oh great, fantastic.
But not only that, Liam Kitchen still seemingly bombed out the squad.
Well, this is what I'm going to come to now. The two other big decisions. There's three. You got
so
the goalkeeper.
Out of the back five, right? Three of the back five were still there from the Preston game after that shambolic display defensively. So I'm not sure on the thinking.
I mean, listen, I'm of the view, if you're ill, like, I don't know.
If you're ill, you're not in the squad.
Yeah, you're not on the bench. If you're fit enough on the bench.
Exactly.
So it's like, to me, the ones I don't understand, after De Silva's performance against Preston, it was like, you know, because Robbins has done this earlier in the season. Bobby Thomas made one mistake at Watford. He was taken out of the team.
Yeah.
De Silva, even by Robbins' own admission, had a howler, got hauled off at half time. And you're thinking, this is perfect for Bidwell. West Brom, physicality, you know, he'll come in. No. Liam Kitchen, I do not. This is the one I don't understand. And for a long time, I've not been the biggest. I've not seen what other people have seen with Binks, to be honest. And I've always been a bit like, he looks suspect.
But I think Binks would be better in the centre of a back three if you're going to play probably it, rather than on the left hand side.
I don't understand why Kitchen's out the team. The thing, it all started when Kitchen came in. He missed the Millwall game. So he missed Norwich and Millwall because he was suspended.
Yeah.
And Sheffield Wednesday, which was sandwiched in there. Then he comes back in Plymouth, scores the equalising goal. You know, it was actually, and he played okay. It was Thomas who had a bit of a mare that game, Plymouth. Then Stoke, and the next three games, just out the team again. And it's like, we're talking about players needing rest and stuff. Well, he had a two-game rest because he was suspended. And he comes back in and scores the equaliser. I mean, to me, just from the outside, and again, I'm not, neither of us are at Wrighton. I don't know what's going on. But like, to me, from what I've seen with my eyes, Liam Kitchen's performances, he's been like
the standout.
Really, a standout performer.
In that defensive line, the standout performer for me. Even better than Bobby Thomas. I have reservations over Bobby Thomas personally in some scenarios. But Liam Kitchen has been the one player, other than I still think he dived in for the chance at Norwich. But he's been the standout player. And we talk about, you know, finding a formation that works, consistency. We found one, ladies and gentlemen. We went on 18-game unbeaten streak. What was the formation? A back four. Majority of the games was Van Ivac, Thomas, Kitchen, and Bidwell, with Collins behind. Okay, I don't personally rate Collins, but I rate him enough to be the starting goalkeeper. Because of his performances,
you don't go on that run. You don't go on the run that we have. Even if you can't factor in the two defeats, take away West Brom because it was back five. But if you look at all the other games and you go, well, actually, there's three defeats in that run playing a back four since November. That's not a coincidence. You don't do that by luck. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you'd argue that we were riding our luck at the start of the season, that we were getting some draws in some games. You know, Watford last minute goal. You know, that's, you know, and things like that. Norwich last minute own goal as well. You know, we could have easily lost those two games. I don't know. I don't understand why Kitchen's not playing, because I don't think Binks has been particularly great. And again, I think we saw it again. And so, I mean, immediately seeing that team, I was the same as you. I was angry. I just knew exactly how it was going to go. And then you get 5 minutes. I mean, I guess the positive is that we lasted, you know, 10 times as long as we did against Preston. But I mean, it's just embarrassing. Like, we literally look so porous defensively.
Yeah. And every good team is built on a very, very solid foundation. You look at all the teams that are playing well in this division, and you could pretty much say they make maybe one change every three or four games in that back line. We're making three, four, five formation changes here and there. We're not good enough to be making those changes. We've showed that we're not good enough. Listen, this could turn into an hour-long rant about a back five. I don't particularly want to.
I think all fans are in the same boat, though. I can't imagine there's many people who'd be listening to this thinking, like, I completely disagree. Because, listen, the back five served its purpose, like, you know, and we had it for several seasons. But clearly, I think everyone could see that, you know, it wasn't working. And, you know, I was just thinking then, people might be going, well, you know, last season we had the goalkeeper who kept the golden glove, and how did we keep so many clean sheets? Well, I'll tell you again, it comes down to Jokeres, because we were able to just sit in literally as a flat five.
Reserve so much energy.
And then just play a ball in the channel and
move the ball to pitch.
I said it on a podcast earlier in the season. I think it was me and Dave Moore. And last season, we won like seven games 1-0. And if you go through those 1-0s, they were all something where, like, Jokeres did something just ridiculous, and they would have otherwise finished 0-0. And you sort of just go, we wouldn't have made the playoffs then if one of those hadn't been a win. So I just think, hopefully this is the end. I mean, Robin's even admitted it, but I felt like saying, I could have told you that, Mark, 10 seconds after the team came out. I could have gone, we're going to be way too passive today, you know.
And both goals come from being passive, don't they? I mean, the first one, We saw the guy do it, Johnston do it against Plymouth a week and a half ago. Exactly the same goal. And then the Dean Garner goal is the ball just like, De Silva puts a half-assed effort in for me. and then the ball goes past two players and it falls to him. Like, it's just piss poor. And it, honestly, it all comes down to not knowing each other's position and etc. Like, you're totally confused in the moment.
But the problem is, it's like we're waiting to concede because we have absolutely, like, again, and it was just a heart back to the start of the season. You watch us and you go, how on earth are we going to score? You know, either it's not going to be something spectacular or that, an own goal or something. Whereas you go back to, you know, that great run we were on, you felt like, oh yeah, dynamic. Listen, I know Sakamoto's injured, but you had Haji Wright looking really good off the left. You know, Casey Palmer, O'Hare, Ellis Sims. There's players there. Victor Torp's now come in and looked, you know, really good. There's still enough with Sakamoto being injured for us to still look dynamic. Because also, Van Avac was getting forward. He was overlapping up on the right. So, and then suddenly we go to a back five and it's just... What I don't understand, Dean, is like, De Silva, the wing back. So you got back three and then De Silva is literally stood halfway in our half. And Ellison's up by himself. O'Hare and Palmer just taking it turns by hide and seek sort of thing. Like in front of the midfield. Because, and then they're just outnumbered. So, you know, you got West Brom shirts all the way across midfield. So then De Silva just goes back to Binks. And then I'm literally like, if I see those two pass it between each other one more time.
They must have the most passes between, well, actually, probably O'Hare and Palmer during that little sequence before half-time. That pissed me right off, that.
Oh, well. How are you?
They're running down the clock for half-time, passing the ball like to each other so they get their passing accuracy stats up. It's a joke.
We play in that formation like we don't know what we're doing. That's the only explanation, because I would love to ask Mark Robbins. I'd be like, what's the plan? So when Binks has got it, what are you in an ideal world seeing? Like, what should he be doing? What should everyone else be doing for us to then create these chances? Because again, I wasn't seeing it last season either. It was just a ball into the channel to Vic. And I know people kind of have that. But my point is that this formation isn't working with the personnel we've got. And it was working for 18 games, whatever it was, you know, from November with a back four.
Seemingly, we've just gone away from it. I personally also feel like we're missing some leadership in there. And I think it has to be in the form of Liam Kelly. You play a back four, you've got an extra player to, you know, to put him in there.
Stunned he didn't play. I'm really stunned because I thought he got a full 19 against Maidstone. It was on the Monday. I mean,
it felt like the type of game where it was absolutely made for him. Just to sit there and go, right, let's be solid here. Let's just sit in, get a shape, get a foothold and see what we can do with it from there on. But once you go 1-0 down in, 6 minutes or stuff, the game plan's out the window, really.
Yeah, exactly. And then, yeah, just everything. And also every shot that's on target at the moment just seems to be flying in the back of the net. You know, like Wilson doesn't seem to be saving anything. I'm not saying he should have saved the first one or anything, but it just feels like shots on our goal seems like quite a high percentage are leading, you know, two goals.
I don't have that stat for you, unfortunately. No, but I can imagine.
I had seen it. I'd seen,
but there was two out of two for them, weren't it? Two shots on target, two shots, two goals.
Well,
17 shots for us, three on target.
Well, that was the thing I was going to come on to. Shots to shots on target. I mean, please, for the love of God, I mean. I rate Sims, and I know people say, but I do think there's a player there. I really do. But I saw those two shots he had. Well, I'm thinking, it just like he's playing FIFA and he just held circle down too long and just blasted it over. I'm thinking, mate, work the keeper.
He had five shots and five shots off target. You know,
And
two of them were probably like gilt edge chances, really. The one with the free ball from Palmer and the one where he, you know, nearly goes out for a throw-in, really, on his right foot. Nearly goes out for a throw-in behind him.
Yeah, it's...
Really. I think he will come good. I think, I just think he's lacking confidence. And, you know, we can't keep saying this because at some point it has to change. But I think he has shown enough previously at other clubs that he can finish. And he has shown with us that he can finish. But it's just not enough. Like, we give him so many chances.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, so many chances. And it's like you want to see him hitting the target. Because actually, if the next step, if he was finding the target most of the time, then you're like, okay, it's getting there. It's close now. It's just so rash.
It is rash.
Like, he's just scored a hat trick, and you just you're just thinking, okay, bit of calmness. Like, and it's just, I don't know, it's what I'd do tomorrow at six aside. Just like
very overzealous, isn't it?
And very, very like, here's a chance, like, wide eyes, and then just snap at it. And it's like, you're a professional footballer, man. Like, please just. But like, I think the least of our problems from Friday was Ellis Sims. Least of our problems, because first half was an absolute graveyard shift. You 2-0 down. I mean, if it's 0-0, if this is the problem with the back five this year, defensively, we've been worse. So it's not like if we were unbelievable with a back five defensively, but we lost a bit going forward, you could sort of see like, okay, right, okay, I can see the merit, but we've been worse defensively with the back five as well. So I don't know. And we lose all our attacking spark. Like, we literally, O'Hare, anonymous, you know.
Yeah, I was about to mention, he obviously got dragged off at half time. I think it was fully justified, in my opinion. I think it looked like he didn't really care much after just getting 2-0 down.
This
tippy tappy stuff. Okay, you know, it looks great in your stats, but you look like a right knob passing the ball. Him and Palmer passed the ball between each other 12 times in about 20 seconds. And I was like, well, we're not going anywhere, lads. One of them involved, like, they tap to each other within like a couple of seconds. And I was like, what's that about? They got a few whistles from the crowd. But that just sort of epitomised everything. Like, there was just sort of that laborious attitude.
Yeah, we've got no other idea of what to do, so we'll just do a little bit of pinball between us.
It pissed me right off, that little moment before half-time. I had my remote in my hand, and I got up off the sofa, and I threw it so hard at the sofa. I was so angry.
Yeah. No.
I don't normally get like that.
No, it was...
It just flipped me over the edge massively, because West Brom didn't have to do anything for that win. Anything at all. And then when we finally got a foothold in the game, second half, and we started to create a little bit more, and it was too late. And we still persevered with the back five.
Yeah, unbelievable.
What's going on? We've got five substitutes.
I'm all here to double down on things at times, but oh my word. You, like, for the love of God, honestly, like, I was like, he has to take off Binks, man. Like, and he needs to just play fucking Latibodier and Thomas or what, and he's bring Wright on. And when he kept the back five, I was thinking, Matt Roberts talked about mentality after the game. He said, second half, that aggressive mentality. It's like, yeah, it's easy to do that when you're 2-0 down.
And chasing, yeah.
Chasing, because we've got enough. It's like, well, okay. But, you know, we won the second half. Yeah, whoop-de-doo. But the first half, when we're in the game, and it's like, this is when you want to, let's go at them. We're passive, and then we inevitably concede. The first half reminded me of our first season back in the Championship, where we would just sit there, literally back five again, sit there and just do some nice passes. We would refuse to do anything risky. And then inevitably we'd just concede, because we'd just be getting deeper and deeper, and they'd have so much territory that eventually teams of that quality are going to put a good ball in the box or you know, get a good shot off, and inevitably it's going to go in. And I just, to persist with about 5 second half. I mean, Matty Godden, I mean, listen, he's coming for some serious criticism, but you're there and you're thinking, you're chasing the game. Pack five and Matty Godden can't even come on. Like,
that's when you know things are going bad for you as a professional. You're not being brought on in that type of game.
Listen, I think everyone's been critical of Matty Godden saying recent weeks, but like, I'm there going, it's 2-1. You know, we need, you know what? He's the sort of person actually who again, if it, you know, one of those Sims chances where he could get, say, a shot off.
Yeah.
You wouldn't bet against Matty Godden, like, you know,
at least getting on target.
Yeah, getting it on target, making the keeper work.
That'll be a start.
So I was, again, Mark Robinson's use of Matty Godden surprises me sometimes, because sometimes he'll like start him and you're like, I'm really surprised.
There's games where he shouldn't be started or be brought on in, and he gets brought on.
And then there's games where you're thinking, you know what, we need another striker. We haven't got that many attackers.
Yeah.
And he's an unused sub, and you just go, I don't know.
They only got out their half. I was looking at this today. They only got out of their half 7 times in the last 25 minutes.
Who, West Brom?
Yeah, and completed a pass.
I was watching it and thinking, Palmer, listen, I thought second half, he was more instrumental, but he is so frustrating.
Oh, yeah.
Like there's times where you're like,
how's he done that? And there's times they just what are you doing?
And I'm thinking, if this was us, if we were West Brom, you know that they would score, the opposition, because they were just, we were literally, you know, wave after wave, but then we'd just give the ball away with the most, Palmer would like, you do a bit of skill and you're like, oh, class. And then the pass, he'd like, there'd be Van Aebak open on the right wing and he'd try and thread this eye of the needle pass to Sims. And I'm like, oh, but Van Aebak was there. Pass.
Yeah,
like,
I remember which one you're talking about. Yeah,
yeah. I remember going, I remember I stood up then. I mean, I couldn't find a remote to throw, but I was like, what is going on? Please. Oh,
total wind up. I felt like a good therapy session. I think we're in total agreement. The back five should never be seen again unless we get different players to actually utilize the system correctly.
Well, we just look so far. It's not like it's not like we're close. Like, and I've gone, you know, it's really close to actually. I honestly don't think I don't look at us and think we know what we're doing in it.
But it feels like we're an experiment this season. That's what it feels like. But I feel like we experimented at the start of the season, found the nucleus effectively in the back four with Collins. And now you've got an opportunity to experiment at the top end of the pitch. So let's do that. But keep the solid base we found.
The solid base. Keep that back five of the goalkeeper and the back four. You know, like, yes, we haven't got that many wingers, but we've got centre mids. Ben Sheaves coming back. There are a lot of four-man formations that don't need wingers. You know what I mean? Like we said at the start, you could play Kelly sitting in as that sort of pivot. Then you could have, you know, Victor Torp and, you know, Ben Sheaf when he's back, or Eccles. There, yep. And then you could have O'Hare behind Wright and Sims, or you could have Palmer, like you say, 4-2-2-2 or whatever. And then give Palmer and that freedom, and then
just
get
say,
the fullbacks bombing
fill
on.
The space, guys. All you have to do is fill the space. You know, you've got a little bit of protection in Liam Kelly back there, but by the time they've got the ball in that part of the pitch, you should be able to trap back, pick up a player, pick up the space defensively. And also an attacking sense as well. Just give them the freedom to do that. There's an opportunity there, I feel. But
I do. Well, I think
I'm scared that Mark Robbins doesn't do that enough.
I'm scared we're going to. I'm scared the back five is going to be here to the end of it. And I really.
Surely can't look at that on Friday and go, yeah, that was a, you know, solid base of a performance.
Well, no, because I mean, and again, Robbins did say what we were thinking, but I don't know, like, it's bizarre to me. It really is, you know, and in the individuals defensively, like, listen, at the start of the season, De Silva, you know, is arguably one of our better players. But if I have to see him do like a little Elastico skill, you know, in our own defensive third, what, like, please just help ourselves. We don't help ourselves. That's the problem. Like, and then everything's so reactive. You know, we just let them, I wouldn't even say they took control. We just went, come on then, come on to us. And then, you know, take the lead and put the game out of sight. And then suddenly it's like, well, okay, now we'll give it a huff and puff in the second half. But frustrating, Dean, mate. I hope I'm Rotherham. I mean, if I see a back five on Tuesday, oh,
will you walk out?
I won't walk out, no. But I'll
dirty protest.
No, I might go and get. I might go for my little my first half. Wee break might happen quite soon, maybe, and I'll grab a.
It might be a prolonged one.
Yeah, but hopefully not. I mean, well, obviously we're going to come on to that, but yeah, very disappointing. Yeah.
Do you have a man of the match? Is there any? I'll perform man of the match. Is there anything else you want to say?
I mean,
we've had a good 35-minute rant here.
Well, the last thing I want to ask, just throw out there, because we spoke about, you know, Kitchen and Binks and Bidwell, you know, and De Silva. The other thing is the goalkeeper situation, mate. Like, the one thing that I've heard from so many people have said, they've all said the same thing. I don't understand why Collins is taken out against Stoke. Like, everyone said the same thing to me. And I sort of thought, like, oh, maybe, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what's gone on there. I don't know what you think, Auntie.
To be honest, I haven't heard anything. I normally get a little inkling of anything that's happened.
Do you think Collins is going to come back in, or?
Well, yeah, he has to at some point. Like, I didn't get the decision in the first place. I'm like, okay, yes, we got a clean sheet in the game that Wilson came in, everything, happy days. But since then, it still hasn't been great, has it?
Well, if you look at the last three games then, with that, you know, with with the Silva, Binks, and Wilson in goal, you know, two defeats out of the last three. The Stoke game was only one, you know, 1-0, and you know, again, he wasn't
we went up against an awful Stoke side. Yeah,
wasn't a resounding, you know, wasn't a comprehensive victory. I mean, he's got to make changes. I mean, I don't know. It almost feels like some bizarre sort of experiment.
But he keeps saying about, you know, the illness and stuff. But how long is this flu then? And if he has the flu, he shouldn't be in the squad.
Well, I mean,
because if I'm not a doctor, whatever. You can still be contagious. You can still get symptoms from, you know, people who've had the flu 10, 12 days. It's not, you know, talk about this incubation period or whatever nonsense. Like I said, I'm not a doctor, but you can still get symptoms from it. So if you have any type of illness like that, you shouldn't be anywhere near the first team because it could just rip through the squad. We've seen it in the past with other teams. We've had ourselves. There was that, but you know, that I remember that, was it the Blackpool game when everyone was ill a few years back?
And he played Palmer up front. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, you know,
I just don't understand. Like, you know, yes, he was rotating the team because obviously all the fixtures, you know, playing a Sunday, Wednesday, Saturday, whatever it was. I don't understand, though, this sort of weird last couple of games, this sort of weird just change. Because like you said this, Dean, you said it on Twitter and on the group chat. But like, I think changing the forward line, mixing that up, it can be a positive thing because it's, you know, keeping everyone fresh. And again, listen, it's the forward areas, you know.
The element of surprise.
Whereas defensively, you want to keep it, you know, like the relationships. We said this at the start. I remember we did a pod and we said that the relationships just aren't there. And then suddenly we went on that really good run. I think it was me, you and Dave. And we said, again, you can see it coming now. Kitchen and Thomas and Collins, you can see that. Yes, we're going to concede goals. That's just the nature of football. But Bidwell and Kitchen, you could see them starting to build an understanding. And then that was transcending it further forward with Bidwell and Hadji Wright and Van Avak and Sakamoto, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't know, now, just the last 2-3 games, it feels like all that's just been blown out the window.
Yeah.
And now we don't, you don't know who your defensive partner is going to be. You don't know if it's going to be the back three or back four. So I don't know. I'm at a bit of a loss.
I'm really with you. Total loss. I'm also a loss for who I'd give man of the match. Do you want to? Maybe Palmer for forcing it a little bit more.
Yeah. Palmer. As frustrating as he
is. It's a low fucking bar this week, by the way.
He was trying. At least what he was trying to do is, you know, I can't on one hand, you know, criticize in the first half that no one was trying any risky passes. Yes, Palmer, sometimes there is an easy option out there and he sort of ignores it and goes for the Hollywood one. But he tries stuff and he was trying stuff in the second half. It is a low bar, but I agree. I think I'd give it to Palmer.
Right, let's move on to a little feel-good factor of the podcast earlier today. I spoke to Jamie McAllister from the Coventry City Disabled Supporters Association to talk about the brand new campaign, Unite for Access. Jamie, welcome along to the Sky Blues Extra podcast. How are you, fella?
I'm good, thanks, mate. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely, no problem at all. Obviously, a huge deal at the moment. You're here to talk about a very, very important initiative. Fans may have spotted it over the last few games. I think Joel actually walked out at the Hawthorns with a poster. It's for the Unite for Access campaign, which is a period of inspiration and celebration of good access and inclusion at sports venues. You were involved in the launch with the club a couple of weeks ago. Can you just talk us through that and its importance, please?
Yeah, so Unite for Access is, like you said, a campaign that is run by a charity known as Liberal Playing Field, who do great work, mainly in football, but they do it across just sports in general, where, we celebrate what sports clubs, football clubs already do for those disabled supporters, whether it's providing a set facility like a sensory room for neurodivergent individuals or audio description commentary for visually impaired and blind people, anything like that. And it is purely just a time for clubs to, obviously, like you've seen yourself and probably people listening at the Maidstone game or the West Brom game on Friday night, is to purely raise awareness of disability in that, you know, disabled people do attend football games and sports events, but we just access it in a slightly different way to your standard way of accessing a sports event. So yeah, it just allows clubs to show off really about, you know, what we do. This is the levels we go to, and some of the people involved in the football clubs do amazing work. They work out hours and hours doing all sorts of things just to make that, you know, 2-3 hours on a Saturday afternoon or whatever it is as enjoyable as possible for disabled supporters. And thankfully and luckily, as for the Maidstone game, coincided with the, probably you say, official launch for the new Coventry City Disabled Supporters Association. So that was really well tied in, and that's where you would have saw the photos with myself and a few other people, along with Ben Wilson, Liam Kelly, and Ellis Sims and Josh Eccles. So yeah, it's been a good couple of weeks really to really push forward that, you know, the club mean good and want to make those match days as accessible and as enjoyable as possible for everyone.
It's been great that we've been on TV for both those games as well. So the awareness, exactly, hopefully, yeah, is even more. You've mentioned the Disabled Supporters Association there. That's a great move from the club, isn't it? You know, how hopeful are you now that there's a key link between the club and then it might open up more possibilities for disabled fans to still access and enjoy the football like we all should?
Yeah, exactly. It's been a while in the making. I've been pushing for it for probably almost a couple of years now. And now we have Jodie Jones at the club, who's the supporters liaison officer. She's been great in kind of speaking for us to the club, you know, the people within the club who can really make decisions.
I'm glad you mentioned her, because she seems to have like really implemented lots of key changes, hasn't she?
She has,
the ticket buying experience is a lot better now from what I've been told. And that sensory room, which you've mentioned before, so important. Those, I mean, they might seem small in the grand scheme of things, but for people who have those disabled issues, it's massive for them.
Exactly, Ed. It's huge, and you need someone like that, whether it's one person or whether it's a team of people. You need someone like that to really, you know, take your corner, so to speak, and put the reasons across to the people who really can make those, you know, final decisions that this is what we need, this is why it's important, and these are the benefits. So yeah, and she's not only, obviously, she's just a supporter as an officer as well. She's having to deal with every single fan in general, as well as the disabled supporters. So she's doing a great job, and she's really enabled us to get this DSA up and running properly as well, facilitating the meeting we did a few weeks back with the players, and being our kind of middle person, so to speak, between us and the club. So, and that's what we're aiming for going forward. We aim to be a advisory group of sort to begin with, just to, you know, advise the club on what is best to do to make the match days and everything else surrounding the club really more accessible. And yeah, it's like Jody is with us in the club, we hope to be with us and the club, so to speak. So with the fans, sorry, and the club, to be that person or group of people that a disabled supporter can come to after maybe a positive experience or a negative experience, and just tell us what they thought and how they think we could improve, or a solution, or it could be small, it could be big. Just
gives them
really
a voice, doesn't it? That's the main thing.
Exactly. Yeah, we are. That's what we hope to be. We hope to be a voice, and just to make the club better as a whole. You know, we're on a good patch on the pitch, so why not match it with stuff we do on off the pitch?
Totally agree. As part of this association, is there one key thing that you want to try and get across the line?
Well, if I was to be selfish,
be selfish. Why not?
It'd be the audio descriptive commentary.
Right. Is that not available at the moment?
It's not, no. It's available in a sort of that you can request a headset or portable radio, which allows you to listen to
CWR. BBC, yeah.
Yeah, which is, you know, it's fine. But for someone like myself, or for anyone else who pretty much basically can't see anything that's going on the pitch, it's audio descriptive commentary and radio commentary are quite
very different, I can imagine. Yeah.
So they're very, very descriptive, obviously, like it says on the tin, basically. And you miss things listening to radio commentary that you wouldn't miss if you were to use AD commentary. So, yeah, that's one of the big things that I'm trying to push. And
I remember with AD commentary, I might just bringing this up. I remember clicking on it on my remote by mistake at some point, and it's such a different experience. It's really like, it's not odd, but it's just different. Like, it doesn't feel like a standard commentary.
Yeah, it brings you things to your attention that you wouldn't really notice, isn't it? Like
more detail, explaining more in detail. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, like, you know, what someone looks like, or the emotions, or what they're literally doing with their arms and legs, or, you know, anything like that.
To be fair, I think we might need a lot of fans to have some AD commentary for some of the stuff they talk about.
Yeah, you make a good point. Yeah, it is one of those things. And rugby, I've got into it. They're doing it at the moment on with the Six Nations, and they're doing it on TV. So that's a good thing, and that gets it out there. But I'm personally probably won't be one who used it myself as much as maybe some others, because I go with my fiance, who does a very good job of telling me what's on the pitch. But, you know, I couldn't tell you how many visually impaired or blind fans go to Cobb games. I know at least half a dozen, and they would all use it. And let's say that's six season tickets, you know. So that's, and if it's more visually impaired and blind fans see that service is now available, and I think, oh, then I can now access the game.
Well, one person completely tells another person, and then before you know it spreads out wildfire effectively.
Exactly. And you don't know how many more season tickets that could be. So that is the aim, just getting people in and people enjoying the game like we all should.
Has that been the biggest barrier for you then in the past following Coventry? How's that sort of changed over the years for yourself?
Yeah, it's been an interesting one, really. I as some of the guys from SBE, when I've been to a couple of games with them, away games, and I'm very much like, just get amongst it. I'll sing and shout and whatever. And
as you should do. You should feel part of the Sky Blue Army. Like,
exactly,
regardless of if you can't see, you can't hear, whatever the disability may be, we're all one. We're all, you know, gunning for the same cause, effectively.
That's it. Yeah, we all are there for the same reason. And some people like to access the game differently. Some people like to go sit down in a quiet a bit and stick a pair of headphones on and listen to the commentary whilst, you know, they kind of soak in the atmosphere, so to speak. Whereas you have people like me. So yeah, my experiences have been different, really. It's definitely helped, obviously, that I go with people and they're happy to tell me what's going on and what have you. And my fiance does a great job. She wasn't really a football fan to begin with, but now she knows all the terms. I think she even knows what offside is, which,
wow,
I'm pretty proud of myself.
Yeah, that's surprising for a person who doesn't know football coming into the game.
that's with my explanation, so I don't know how I've got that one across. But yeah, she knows all the players' names, and yeah, it's something like that where I just go just because it's an escape, and you can enjoy yourself for 90 minutes, or at least most of the time. And you have amazing moments like Middlesbrough away, or the Wembley game, or Blackburn away last season, or anything like that. And that is what you go for, really, isn't it?
Absolutely. You obviously spoke about the campaign, and obviously it's been highlighted over these 2 weeks, but it's so important, isn't it, that we sort of continue the awareness into the future and not just sort of stranglehold it to these 2 weeks. We need to keep, you know, knocking the nail on the head as such.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? Like, it's same with any kind of awareness campaign, is it's not limited to just these 2 weeks. It's about just pushing it forward beyond the 2 weeks, and hopefully with the DSA, that is something that we can do. We can, you know, push all these little things forward that the club may miss or anything like that, and just allow that kind of space for people to attend and really to capture what they think they should be enjoying within football, whether it's the football itself or whether it's socialise. You know, there's all sorts of things people go to the football for. So yeah, it's beyond these 2 weeks, but these 2 weeks definitely help highlight it to start with, and you know, yeah, you can then just keep pushing, and you never know where you'll end up.
And just finally, I think we should probably talk about your win at the FCA, the Football Content Awards. You won the Equality, Diversity and Inclusion Award. That must be such a proud feeling, because I've seen it myself. You've been pushing for, you know, all the tireless work you put into campaigning for the alternative text on images, on social media. I thought it was ironic that they announced you as the winner and there was a nice picture there, but there was no alternative text.
Yeah. Yeah.
which is really ironic. But I mean, yeah, incredible achievement for yourself. So well done on that.
Thank you. It's ages ago now. But yeah, that was a very surreal moment. And Yeah, I like to think I'm making some impact, whether it's small or big, I don't know. But yeah, it's some of that I enjoy. So, you know, that is the main thing. And it's, if it's something you enjoy, then you're going to put your all into it. And hopefully things come of it. And I'm extremely proud to have that along with another award, actually, that I won earlier this year. So, yeah, it's great. It's really great.
Mate, I reckon we could actually go on for ages here. It's been a fascinating chat, and I'm sure we'll go into some more detail in the future, and we'll get you on again. But definitely, for the time being, absolutely, like, kudos to you for all the tireless work, and keep going, because people will benefit from it. Just finally, where can people find you on social media?
Yeah, they can go at that blind lad on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it these days. That's all I use, and that's where I tirelessly talk about alt techs and everything else. I also have a podcast if you want to listen to that, if you're interested in disabled people's stories, and that's the That Blind Lad's podcast on anywhere you like to listen.
You're listening to Sky Blues Extra.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Right, let's move it on. Let's look ahead. Tuesday night, Rotherham at home. Thoughts, must win at this stage with how things are sort of shaping up in the league?
Well, Mark Robbins spoke after the West Brom game saying, you know, it's important and imperative that we don't let the season fizzle out. Well, it certainly will fizzle out if we do not win on Tuesday. Rotherham, 3 wins all season.
One of them against us.
One against us. their last win was on Boxing Day.
Oh, Jesus.
They're currently 7 defeats in a row. That game against us over the season was horrendous. And that was, again, a back five, which I'm not going to talk about again. But yeah, they've only won 3 games. And I think if you get done, if a team who's won 3 matches, who are on course to beat their own record of lowest points in the championship season, if they do the double over you or get 4 points out of 6 from you, then you don't deserve to get the playoffs. As simple as that.
And we need a reaction, don't we? This is a game that's just, you just have to react to what was a very, very laborious and poor performance in general, really. And, you know, we showed it against Maidstone. I know the opposition. We bounced back in that game. But we've got to do it again. And it's all about the mentality going into this game for me. Obviously, we've got the better team, we've got the better players, of course, that's a given, but it's about being mentally prepared for the challenge that faces you.
Well, and that's where we fell down at their place earlier in the season. You know, they wanted it more, and I remember Mark Robbins was very angry after that game, as were we all. But I sort of just, it is that mentality thing. And I was thinking about this, you look at West Brom, you look at Preston, right? You know, we played them when they played us. You look at Hull, and you look at Norwich, they seem to have, you know, up until like 2 weeks ago, we were the team in the playoffs. All these other teams seem to have this mentality of, we're going to do it. You know, pressing like, we've set a point tally, we're going to do it. They might get it, they might fall short. It is what it is. But they seem to, regardless, they're going to leave everything out on the pitch. Same with Norwich, they're getting good form. West Brom, you know, again, ruthless, keep churning out the results. Hull. We, for some reason, I don't know why, like, I don't know, just look a bit scared, or just to look a little bit sort of like overawed by the pressure and sort of just feeling a bit sorry for ourselves. I don't like understand. That's how it sort of seems. But we can't do that on Tuesday. And I want to see us. There's no two ways about it. We have to win. Like, yeah, we sort of got away with it results wise. You know, Hull and Preston drawing was probably the best we could have hoped for out of that game. But we have to win on Tuesday. Anything other than a win, I do think that is curtains, because you need to be beating Rotherham. You know, I'm sure Mark Robbins will come out and say they're a good side, like he does about every team. But they're not. They're a terrible team.
You know, I actually watched the Rotherham Sheffield Wednesday game on Saturday, on iFollow, just to see how Rotherham played, really. And they give you so many opportunities, it's actually scary. Not just in front of goal, just opportunities to play through the lines. They played this very odd system where they had a very rigid three at the back, but never played wing backs. They played just wingers. So there was always that opportunity to float the ball in behind and get at them. Now, I know we don't have Sakamoto, but we've got Haji Wright, who could do that job very, very well.
You could put Palmer out. You could put Palmer
on the right hand side. These are the type of players that need to find space. And that's, I think we're going to get so much space in this game. And it's about utilizing it as much as we can. They are not a very good team. They don't create chances at will. They don't string passes together. They're just very, very poor. And like you say, if you can't come out of that game with a performance and a result, then yeah, we don't deserve to stay in the playoff hunt. And the one player who I'd absolutely love from this Rotherham team is their goalkeeper, Victor Johansson. He is outstanding. Distribution, pretty good. But shot saving, aerial presence, he's just a remarkable goalkeeper. I'm still confused, actually, why he's at Rotherham. He hasn't been snapped up by now. But
well, maybe it is. I don't think he's particularly great with his feet. And maybe that's the one thing, you know, in the current holding some clubs back.
Yeah, but I actually thought he did okay with his feet on Saturday. I thought his distribution was pretty good.
Although I meant to pick you up on something, actually, listening to your mate post Maidstone podcast.
This is going to be about Dean, Collins.
Dean said that Maidstone's goalkeeper was incredible. And I mean, obviously being at the game, I was like, he parried it so much. Their goalkeeper, everything he parried. Everything.
It was incredible for Maidstone. That level.
He parried a lot. Yeah, I know. But listen, I do agree. He's a good player. Their goalie, but listen, I mean, he's got to go back four. You can't be playing a back five, you know, against these.
You've got an opportunity to get a lot of attacking minded players in this team against Rotherham. We're not going to be like turned round defensively a lot during the game. That'll be their only opportunity is to counter us, but that's not going to happen all that often, I would say. Especially if you've got someone like Liam Kelly just sitting there, because it sort of negates that opportunity. But then it gives you a chance to have five attack-minded players at the top end of the pitch. And we've got options there. So this is the reason why we're asking for the back four.
Exactly. 4-2, you can easily, with the personnel we've got, you can easily still play 4-2-3-1 and have, you know, Kelly sat there with Torp. And allow Torp to then go forward. And then you can have Palmer, O'Hare, and Haji Wright. Like, Haji Wright can just drift slightly wider than Palmer. I mean, it's so, like...
It's very easy.
It's easy.
I know they're not natural sort of wingers, but they don't have to be.
But I'm like, you know, anyone who plays FIFA will know, you can play the 4-2-3-1 wide or the 4-2-3-1 narrow or Football Manager. And you just have... Palmer can just... Because then if Palmer likes to drift in, you can then have whoever the wing-back is... That's where they should be overlapping. And then if you've got Kelly sat there, then you will almost have a back three, because you then have Bobby Thomas filling that space on the right, Liam Kitchen on the left, and then Kelly can sit there.
And both and those defensive players can move up with the attack. I mean, Thomas actually did that quite a bit on Friday night. Well, he started to move up a little bit. That was the only sort of change that was made.
He does that. I mean, that's what, at least that's what Liam Kitchen does. And, you know, Liam Kitchen sometimes will do, say, like, you know, do a poor pass, but he's trying. He will bring it forward, whereas I feel like Binks wants to be literally the deepest player. If you ever watch, he's always like the closest person to our goal. And it just obviously stifles everything. I mean, obviously Latibodia is gonna play. He is Robbins's new favourite, I think.
The new love child.
So I don't know where he'll
I actually play. Think he might play right back.
Do you think?
I think he might take Van Ewijk out for a little bit.
Well, that's the other option. You could play Van Ewijk on the right wing.
And have
Latabodia right back. And have, and have those two on the right. Have Bidwell and Hadji right. And then you, because Van Ajvak can, you know, is a defender. And he's got the pace. I don't understand, like, what could possibly go so atrociously wrong with him being on the right wing, to be honest.
Especially against Rotherham.
Well, we've got to take the game to him. I feel like this is the sort of game that if we play a back five and you get 25 minutes in and it's 0-0 and we haven't created a lot, I always find with the back five, the inevitable happens, that the change comes. And it's like, but why not just start like that, you know?
So we'll see. Let's look at the league. As it stands, obviously losing to West Brom puts us 8 points behind them, who are in fifth place. But again, results have sort of gone our way. It was only Norwich that picked up a victory over the course of the weekend's fixtures. Preston Hall obviously played each other to a goalless draw. So it leaves us 5 points behind Hull. It's getting to that stage now where you've got to just keep in touch with those teams above you.
Well, you look at the next fixtures. You've got Rotherham on Tuesday, then away at Watford, then Huddersfield, then Cardiff. Cardiff's at home.
Yeah.
And then, at some point, the whole game will get rearranged.
I think that'll be last two games of the season.
You look at it.
I actually think that could work out well for us if we're still in the picture.
The next four games, because you're going to have Jamie Allen back, Ben Sheaf back, because then suddenly it's like, again, there's actually...
Oh, hello, we've got more options.
There's more centre-mid options. It's like, we'll use that then. We don't need to be playing three centre-backs. You get an extra man in midfield, have Ben Sheaf, have Victor Tor, have them two together, have Latabodia if you want, or whoever it might be, and see where we go. But I mean, from the next four games, Rotherham, Watford, Hull and Huddersfield, I really think we need...
9 points minimum?
Probably bare minimum 8. Like if we got 2 wins and 2 draws, ideally 9.
Yeah, I think 9 gives us a chance. I still think it's a slim chance at this point. I do think that the loss of Sakamoto probably puts the nail in the coffin for me, like I said last week, but... If you can get out those four games, they're all before the international break, right? Including the FA Cup.
Yes.
Yeah. So if you get into that, 2 or 3 points off it, then you've got a chance. I know April's difficult, but who knows? Everyone's going to be playing for stuff during that period of time. So,
well, you look at the next fixture. So we've got Rotherham on Tuesday. Hull. I've got Birmingham fighting for their lives. They were unlucky to lose.
Fighting like
to
beavers.
you've got, Norwich travel to Middlesbrough, Preston travel to Southampton, who are obviously fighting for things, and West Brom travel to QPR, who just beat Leicester, and again, they're still fighting for their lives. So
QPR have turned a corner, it seemed like.
There's a possibility that results in midweek could go our way, and a win could suddenly, we could end Wednesday night after the other teams have played, only potentially 2 points off,
And it's back on again. And everything's back on. Rosy, so, isn't it? It's mad.
But we have to make sure we have to do our job. And that starts on Tuesday. And there are no excuses. I don't care about injuries. I don't care. You got to beat Rotherham. No matter what. And like I said at the start, if you don't beat Rotherham and you can't, and they've won 3 games all season, and they're so far adrift. I mean, they're on 19 points. They're literally 19 points off safety, then you don't deserve to get the playoffs. As simple as that.
Right then. Prediction? For the benefit of the tape, he's looking at me with a very wry smile.
The only caveat is this. Back four, I'm going to go Coventry City 3, Rotherham 1. Back five, Coventry City 1, Rotherham 1.
Yeah, I'm in agreement. Yeah, I think even with the back four, I don't think defensively we have struggled to keep clean sheets. And, a team, it's just like the Coventry City way when we play a team that, are miles worse than us, we'll inevitably concede to them, be it like a 100%. Stupid last minute goal or whatever. No, like the Swansea game, for example, that still annoys me, that last minute.
Well, Huddersfield as well.
Huddersfield the same. Yeah, so it's, yeah, very frustrating. Right, before we go, I was on Twitter this morning, as I am on a Sunday morning, and there was a question posed. Do you believe in the five-year plan?
You asking me?
Well, yes. Well, why else would I ask you on the
podcast?
Well,
I thought you were just putting it out there into the
thank you very much for listening. Good night.
No, of course I do. I 100%.
I mean, someone replied, right, saying no, because he thinks Doug hasn't put any of his own money in, or as much as he'd hoped. And question, where's the Jokeres and Hamer money gone? I'm like, if your head is that much in the sand,
well, listen, people. But my answer is 100% yes. I mean, everything, the match day experience, the grounds, you can even see, like, obviously the supports and stuff are like half of them are already being like cleaned, all this other stuff, the training ground, all this sort of stuff. And, you know, I mean, spoke to like Bidwell and all the players, they've said, you know, how great that is. The overall, the transfer business. I mean, again, if someone had said to us at the start of the season, Vic and Hamer are going, but you'll get to a quarter final and you'll finish 10th. I think a lot of fans deep down, if you were offered that at the start of the season, would have gone, yeah, you know what?
Well, that's
as
a
rebuild
season,
that's a good rebuild season. Now, that is very likely potentially what's going to happen. 10th, top 10 and a quarter final. Potentially, you know, could get to a semi-final. Who knows? 100%, I think, I mean, clearly, yeah, we've already made a signing for the summer.
There's still plenty of work to be done in the summer. I'm still expecting, you know, 5-6 new faces.
I think there'll be potentially 7.
Yeah,
7 or 8.
Yeah,
really.
If you look at the sort of the build of the squad and who's probably going. Yeah,
and I think, look, Vic's probably going to go, so we'll get a windfall from that. And this whole idea about Doug putting his money in, and again, I think this is sensible.
Who's going to go?
Vic from Sporting, and then we get a windfall.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were going to say. Like Vic, I was like, he just joined us.
No. Jokeres, yeah. So if he, but I'd rather Doug put his money or whatever, and people might say, oh no, it's not his or whatever, but in the infrastructure, the stuff that's there. And then this player sales, I mean, again, people forget about wages. Like, you know,
and there's someone's FFP as well.
FFP,
you can't just throw cash into it.
If Haji Wright is on 20 grand a week, let's say, that's £1 million a year on a 4-year deal. That's £4 million. Now, so like, we sold, people go, yeah, we sold Vic for 20 million. We sold Hamer 15, let's say. You got the fucking wages of these players, man. Like, but these aren't, we're not paying Kit Kats anymore to players and giving them like Andy MP pays you play. These people were having to pay.
Jesus, that's
dough.
A throwback. Wow.
And so like, and I don't, the fact of the matter is, the fact that some people can still moan when, like, regardless of if it was reinvestment, we sold other players in the past and didn't reinvest the money. The fact is, we've already, Ephraim Mason-Clark, from what Darren McCanton was saying, that's at least over 4 million, you know, for him. Yeah, he said on his podcast, he was like, yeah, it's over 4 million sort of thing. And then you look at that and then other players that we're going to be after. I think it's exciting times, and I think it's going to happen. I think we are going to do it, and I think next year there's a real possibility. This year's not over yet, and we've got to make sure we give ourselves the opportunity, at least.
And it's likely we're going to actually get Ronnie Edwards and Burrows from Peterborough as well.
Really?
So it could be like 3 players coming in from Peterborough, and it's probably going to cost us, you know, in the region of 10 to 12 million pound.
You know, and then you got there, yeah, and then obviously then Mason Clark, and then I'm sure there'll be a right winger and a cam of when O'Hare goes, and
a striker,
maybe a striker, or
two,
maybe two
strikers,
so
yeah.
And a centre mid, and
a right back, goalkeeper.
Know, yeah,
there's lots of, like, you know, there's going to be lots of holes to fill again during the summer.
Yeah,
and you can't blow your load first time round. You know, you can't do that. It's about building.
Well, because then everyone who's coming this season have had then a year's experience. So then more players can come in, and then it's like, well, you know, it's already settled. You got I'd like to think the back four settled with Kitchen Thomas, or who knows? But that's I 100% believe in the plan. I think we'd
have
all
right
taken
way.
This.
It's the right way of doing things.
Of course it is.
For a club like us, we have to be sustainable in some kind of fashion.
Everyone would
and
have
we're
taken
doing it the right
it.
Way.
Everyone would have taken this season, like at the start of the season. Or
I
even
think everyone's just a little bit annoyed because we've got ourselves into the playoffs and we've seemingly sort of drifted away.
But
that's
Doug King and what money he's...
That's
nothing to do with which King of Shaves shaving gel he's been using in the morning. What it matters is the back five, man. Like, that's what it sounds
like. Right, I'm closing the shop. I'm doing it, right. Mate, great to chat as usual.
Yeah,
thanks for joining me, and thank you to everyone for listening. Hope you enjoyed the episode. A big thank you to Jamie for joining us as well. Really enjoyed his input this evening. Big thank you to the guys at the Sky Blue Tavern as well for their continued support. We'll be back next week to review the Rotherham game, look ahead to Saturday as well. So until then, play up Sky Blues.
Thanks for listening to the Sky Blues Extra Podcast.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.